You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to our SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series titled TYK2 Inhibitors for the Management of Plaque Psoriasis, Which of Your Patients May Benefit. In this episode, we discuss the role of shared decision-making practices for patients with plaque psoriasis. My name is Debbie Anderson, and I'm excited to moderate today's podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Jerry Bagel, Clinical Professor of Dermatology at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, Clinical Associate Professor of Dermatology from the University of Pisa, and Director of the Psoriasis Treatment Center of Central New Jersey in East Windsor, New Jersey. Hello, Dr. Bagel, and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to talking to you about psoriasis.
So, Dr. Bagel, I have a few questions I wanted to ask you so that we can have a better understanding of the shared decision-making process involved in the management of patients with plaque psoriasis using TYK2 inhibitors. Do many of your patients take advantage of the new treatment advances such as TYK2 inhibitors?
Well, most of the patients that come into my office, whether they are biologically naive or have been on multiple treatments in the past, don't have a really good idea of the therapeutic armamentarium that's available to them. So it behooves me to figure out which biologic might be the best or which treatment might be the best. And we have a lot. We still use phototherapy like I did 40 years ago. We use deucravacitinib. Sometimes we use cyclosporin. And then we use mostly the newer biologics. Risankizumab, ixekizumab. And then it depends on whether they have psoriatic arthritis or not. So some of the drugs like ixekizumab is FDA approved for psoriatic arthritis and has really good efficacy. But on the other hand, there's a slight increased frequency of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. So you want to make sure that the patients don't have any history or family history thereof. So it becomes a discussion with the patient about what treatments, and I might offer them two or three. And I will always offer them an oral treatment. I'll always offer them now, deucravacitinib, I offer that. And then I might offer a medication that might be a shot every 4 weeks, others a shot every 3 months. And then we discuss what the efficacy, what the safety profiles are of the three different medications. Some people come in after they've seen, commercials at the end of news and beginning of Jeopardy, like three different commercials about psoriasis, because they end up scared more about the side effects than they hear about the efficacy. So I have to go over the side effects with them pretty carefully and get them okay. I mean, and there's other, risk factors. I mean, somebody that wants to get pregnant. I mean, what are you going to do there? What medication can you go on? Which one can you stop the quickest if you want? People that have recurrent infections, which one do you think is the least immunosuppressive to help this individual? The other things you talk about, are cost. Can you get it approved? We have a full-time biologic coordinator at our center, so we facilitate patients getting their medications as inexpensively as possible. But those are the basic, and then people want to know, like, well, how quick is it going to work? And that's variable. I mean, but most of the medications that work tend to work pretty quick. Unless somebody's really severe and flaring, I'm not worried about somebody who's had psoriasis for 10 years and if I'm going to get a better in 6 weeks, I'm a hero, or I'm a 12 weeks, I'm a hero. If I can get a better in 12 weeks and they've had psoriasis for 10 years, I'm happy. I'm really happy. The quickness is not as important to me as long-term maintenance. And the other part is some of the biologics, which are large proteins, they're like antibodies. Your body develops antibodies to them. And so they lose efficacy over time in many cases, as opposed to the small molecules like deucravacitinib. If it works, it's going to continue to work. So you're not going to have to worry about it because it's not going to lose efficacy because it's not going to have antibodies produced to it because it's too small a molecule. It's not a protein.
Is that something that comes up a lot where you have a patient on, whatever X drug and it loses efficacy over time because of those antibodies and you have a lot of frustration with your patient, whereas everything was working great. What happened? Do they have this? Is it an internal, you know, what did I do now or what's going on? Or is it, do they vocalize that frustration with you? And how does that progress?
Multiple ways. The drug, the biologics today, I think, have less antibody response than the ones in the past. I mean, adalimumab was the drug for 8-9 years, and it developed a lot of antibodies. It lost efficacy over time. The average biologic lasts about 2 years before it poops out. And so I've seen, like, for instance, I had some people on ustekinumab that started like 2009, and I have a cluster of patients that are still on it and clear. So I think there's also this concept of high responders. So the people that hit PASI 100, really hit PASI 100, that 40% with the real 50% with the newer biologics, they stay clear. They stay clear. Then you have this other group, the PASI 90s, that most of them do well enough, but then they get spoiled. They had 20% body surface area. They went down to 1. Now they have 3. I was one of the authors of the National Psoriasis Foundation, Treat to Target. Treat to Target is people should not have more than 1% body surface area. That's it. And if they have more than 1% and they're upset, I'm willing to discuss with them the possibility of switching to something else. So, but well, you know, what happens in the switch is that you usually have a loading dose that's a little higher. And so of course it's going to work. The question is, are you going to be okay 25 weeks from now, a year from now? And that you just don't know yet. But I do believe that the newer biologics have longer maintained efficacy. And I do know the deucravacitinib TYK2 inhibitors, if they do well, they'll continue to do well.
Do you ever have those patients, they've done all their research online and they come into you and they say, I want you to put me on this drug because I've done the research and everything looks great and I think I'm ready for it. Is that something that ever pops up? Have you ever had any kind of experience that way?
Yeah, my practice is 7 miles from Princeton University. So, you know, I got a lot of geeks and I'm okay. I'm okay with that. And I'll listen. And what I've learned, if that was one of the 3 drugs that was in my mind, I'll say, you're right. Let's do it. And I'm not going to fight them. But it usually becomes a real mental exercise with each thing. Then they want to know about the mechanism of action and they want to know why you have a side effect. And, you know, some of the answers I don't know and I'm not going to BS them. So it's okay. It's okay. If they're wrong, then I'm going to, you know, then it's going to not be a good patient-physician relationship right there. It's going to have to require a little bit of hand-holding, which I don't love.
So actually that leads into my next question. So how do you engage your patients when you're educating them about TYK2 treatments and their possible role in, you know, in getting on that treatment or whatever drug that you think would be best for them for that time? How does that work?
Sure. So the first thing is that, even though I say about handholding, the first thing is empathy. Empathy works. And I do empathize with my psoriasis patients because 40 plus years ago, when I was a resident at Columbia Presbyterian, I spent 6 months on an inpatient service taking care of psoriasis patients, 30 of them that were hospitalized for a month. And they were getting Geckerman therapy, which was developed in the 1920s by the Geckerman brothers in Mayo Clinic. So this is 70 years later, and they're still doing the same treatment. Oh, 60 years later. And they would be overnight in tar and tar seeping through their pajamas and tar baths and lights. And I empathize. I do. And I get them to ask them questions like even, the, you know, the tough guy, you know, he's tough. I was like, do you go to the beach? He goes, no. Do you got children? You don't go to the beach with your children? How come? Oh, well, you know, I got these plaques. I don't like them. I said, well, wouldn't you want to go? I'll say, like, you know, and do you itch? I ask everybody, do you itch? And a 0 to 10, how much you itch? And I tell them how significant their psoriasis is. And I talk to them, especially if they're middle age or younger, about the cardiovascular risks that are involved with psoriasis and potentially decreasing those risks by getting rid of the psoriatic inflammation. And I get all around that. And then if deucravacitinib is an option, I will say this. Get me the blood work, baseline blood work. Let's say you have 20% body surface area and it's moderate. So that's 3. So 20 times 3 is 60. You come back in 8 weeks and you're at 15% in 2. You're now at 30. You were at 60. You're 50% better. You're going to do well. You're probably going to, I can't tell you're going to clear, but you're going to be more than 75% better. I would bet you you're going to be 90% better. On the other hand, if they come back in 8 weeks and they're showing me hardly anything, no, I don't want to use it anymore. And that's how I get people to try it, because I talk to them about the safety and it's oral and they're not, it's not quite, I don't believe, as immunosuppressive as some of the other biologics, but I give them the option though. Like, let's say there's another drug that I can give you that works slightly better. I'm comfortable with the safety profile. It's 4 shots a year. So, you know, you decide what you want. And as I said, if it was just scalp or localized, I'd push it a little harder, because I think people are more amenable to go to a pill than a shot early on in their psoriatic journey.
Do you think that any of the patients ever, quote unquote, fight back about, well, I have to wait 8 weeks for this, or I have to wait, you know, 3 months for this? Like, has that ever been an issue? No.
No. I don't really get much pushback on how quick. I think most of them recognize it's a chronic disease and it's going to take a while. I think where a lot of people, especially younger folk, have issues with the fact that this is a chronic disease and they're going to have to take treatment forever. They don't like that idea. That's where I get pushback. But I'm like, I go, look, you have a chronic immunologic disease of your skin. This is not poison ivy. This is not a 3-week disease that I can give you a 12-day course of prednisone and it's going to go away and not come back. If I told you you had diabetes, I don't think you would ask me how long I need to take insulin. You would ask me how often do I have to check it and what do I have to do? Well, you have an immunologic disease of your skin and it's chronic. Now, maybe there'll be a better treatment down the road. I hope so. Maybe there'll be one shot and it goes away. But until we're there, I think that the treatment options we have today in 2024 are so much better than we had even 10 years ago that I think that having psoriasis now, even though it's bad, at least you have really good options for your treatment.
For those patients who are getting newly diagnosed with psoriasis, or those patients who are, like you said, who are younger and are realizing that this is a lifelong condition that they need to deal with, how do you discuss the role of shared decision-making with them? Like, how does that conversation start, or how does that conversation move forward? Because this is, I'm sure for them, it's very, you know, it's mentally, I'm sure it's very debilitating just to realize that this is something I have to deal with for the rest of my life. So how does that work?
I talk to them about how self-conscious are they about this disease. I mean, what is this doing to their quality of life? Are they having intimacy with the people they love? Are they not? Are they, you know, are they avoiding dating? Are they, you know, hiding? Are they just listening to music and, you know, by themselves? I try to get to understand, are they depressed? Because there's an increased frequency of depression in people with psoriasis. And, you know, I would try to talk to them about these various stigma that they may feel and how they would want to eradicate that so that they could feel more normal and enjoy life more fully. And then I go into, you know, their risk tolerance and what they're, you know, in, like, if they're in college, taking a pill every day might be a lot easier actually than going to their doctor, you know, that lives in another state 4 times a year. So, or getting the medication sent to their dorm, which could be a real mess. So I try to talk to them also about their logistics. And, you know, sometimes you got to get the parents involved if, like, they want better, but they're not able. And sometimes it's nice to bring the parents in so that they're feeling comfortable, whatever we end up doing.
Sure. What do you think are some of the strategies that can be used to incorporate shared decision-making into treatment?
First thing, sit down and be on eye level with the individual. Don't sit between you and the door. Talk about some other stuff, especially, you know, if it's adolescence, I try to talk to them about colleges and school and, you know, what they're doing. And I actually am very interested in that. So I try to talk to them on a personal level first. If they're, I guess, see, some of them don't even care. They don't want to. But I think that, you know, I asked them, like, what is about this disease is upsetting you? And I try to get to understand what is, what impact it's having on them personally in the last week or two. Can you tell me, did you wear different clothes because of your psoriasis? I mean, a woman is not going to wear a black dress. Ain't going to happen. You know, are you not going to the gym because you're afraid of showing your elbows? Are there certain things you would have liked to have done that you didn't do? And I think once you get there, I think, like, I go back to empathy, understanding, explain to them in words that they get, like Denzel Washington said in Philadelphia, explain it to me like I'm in third grade. There's nothing wrong with that. Get it, you know? And so I think those are the best ways I can do that. I mean, other people will have different techniques, no doubt.
Do you find you get a more positive response when you, in the medical field, they don't realize that they are talking in such a medical way, right? Do you see that impact when you're talking to them on that eye level?
I don't talk on a highbrow level to them. I don't. I mean, there's no reason to. I mean, I'm not, unless I'm talking like that to a physician, you know, to you. But to a patient, it's got to be very basic. You know, you have to break it down. You have to break it down. And you know what? You have to break it down when you talk to a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant, and a physician as well. You have to break it down. And so that they get an understanding, like, what does this drug? Well, this drug stops the molecule to be produced that results in psoriasis. And how does it stop it? Well, there's another molecule that activates it. And it stops that activation, and so you don't get that anymore. But because it's a molecule, there's certain things that can happen, like it's suppressing your immune system a little. So you could end up with upper respiratory tract infections. Not common, but it can happen.
Do you see people come in, and I'm sure that you do, people come in where they were on X treatment and they, you know, for whatever reason it failed after so many years, maybe because of the antibody development, like you mentioned before, for whatever reason it wasn't genetically viable for them, or for whatever reason a drug has failed and you put them on something else and they have, like you said, a PASI 90, or they have like a significant clearance, and then just the excitement and overwhelming positivity that they come back and, you know, have that gratitude. Is that something that you experience a lot in your field?
I would say right now, 80% of my patients with psoriasis are extremely happy, 80%. And there's maybe 2%, 3%, where I'm recycling one drug after the other drug after the other drug. And then you start wondering, is it psoriasis? Is it eczema? Is it pityriasis rubra-pilaris? Is it mycosis fungoides? That's why people that don't respond, you need to do biopsies. You need to make sure that it is psoriasis and you're not overlooking something. Because these days, I see a lot of mixed patterns between eczema and psoriasis. And so you treat for the eczema, but the psoriasis is still bad. You treat for the psoriasis and the eczema is still bad. So then we start treating both. And sometimes that works. But yeah, the answer to your question is most of the people do well for at least a few years. And then most of them respond to the second drug as well. The beauty is we have like 13 treatments now. So it's like we have options that we didn't have before. Like before, when we used adalimumab, if it didn't work, there was nothing else. We'd have to add methotrexate to it. You don't want to use methotrexate if you can help it. But that was our only option. And but now I don't hardly use methotrexate at all because the efficacy of most of the oral or the biologics are so good.
You mentioned before that when you were a resident that you were seeing these people who were in the hospital for over a month using strategies that were 60 years old. Is that what made you decide to go into dermatology?
Partially, yeah. What really did is, I'll tell you, nobody had done this before. So I was in the hospital too, and they were there all day. They weren't doing anything, the patients. So I got a psychiatrist, Rita Greensburg, and we started doing group therapy sessions with them. And I started, first time anyone ever done that. And what happened was I found out these people were really depressed. They were suicidal. At the time, they were pissed off at us. You're developing good drugs for everything else, but you don't care about us. You're not developing anything for us. Well, I hope they live long enough to get the treatments that they deserve. But yeah, I just felt that also there was like a deficiency of physicians that were dermatologists that were really interested in psoriasis. Cosmetics were starting to take off big then. And I don't know, it's something that was about me that wanted to do this.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear. I always wonder what kind of puts people on that path.
Well, you know, let me answer another way. When I was in medical school, I was doing an adolescent medicine rotation, and I met a patient. She was 18 years old with psoriatic arthritis and on methotrexate, and she was so unhappy and she was so scared. And I was like, what? Arthritis and psoriasis? What? And it's like that kind of just triggered something in me. And then when I got to Columbia, I just kept learning as much as I can and then started taking, I ended up doing that Geckerman therapy is what it's called, in my office, but people would stay only like for 8 hours, like, you know, 8 to 5, 5 days a week. We had a tar bath, and that's all that was available, that and phototherapy and methotrexate. So when the first biologics became available, people were really happy to start clinical trials. It was easy to get subjects. Now, I think people, once they get better, they expect to be better. That's the rub, because like we said, that's the one thing good. One of the good things about deucravacitinib, if it works, it's going to continue to work. So you don't have to switch around anymore. And, you know, I mean, one could be, you know, this whole JAK inhibitor fear, you know, one could be a little more careful if they wanted to, but like, for instance, let's look at tofacitinib. I wouldn't put a woman that smokes, 24-year-old woman who smokes, is on birth control pills, on that. I wouldn't. But I would do that with deucravacitinib. I'm not that concerned on it, because the data to me is pretty clean that I don't think I need to worry about the other JAK-like inhibitor adverse events.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Beagle. This has really been eye-opening and just really informative, and I really appreciate your insights and your time today. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group in support of improving patient care. Med Learning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. I would also like to give a special thank you to our supporters, Bristol-Myers Squibb, who provided an educational grant for this activity. I want to thank everyone for listening today, and I look forward to seeing you on the next SmartCast Microlearning Podcast series.